Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Work Trends with Megan M. Biro. Whether you're here to network, learn, or share, we want you to have fun. During this live broadcast and Twitter chat, we'll discuss the future of work with smart and entertaining guests who value today's business and its impact on the world of work for the future. Stay tuned, because we start in 3, 2, 1.
Happy Wednesday! It's Megan M. Biro here. Welcome to another informative Talent Culture Work Trends live podcast and Twitter chat. I'm here at the home office in Cambridge, Mass. Just back from almost 2 weeks of travel. Was over at HR Tech World in San Francisco and then New Orleans for sure. Had a blast. So thanks to all my new friends that I've met IRL. You know who you are. Thanks for tuning in if you are today. And thanks to our sponsors and friends who, you know, make this all possible to have loads of fun and banter on with you all. So thanks for being here. Today, I'm really stoked because we're talking about a really hot topic, right? It's something I know we talk a lot about, employee recognition, right? Employee recognition and rewards. I know it's gaining speed. I've been blogging and talking about this for a number of years. One of my guests who's here is a dear friend and colleague of mine who's also been doing the same thing. So we've got some new and interesting, topics for you and angles on this, and I'm excited to unfold this. So let me just dive on in, and for introductions, our first guest is Salvador Barros. He is a millennial. He's 25 years old, and we'll ask him if he still feels like a millennial, by the way. He has been self-motivated to support other young entrepreneurs since graduating through a youth entrepreneurship organization named Bring Entrepreneurs Together. He currently serves as the CEO of Tap My Back, which I think is kind of an interesting name. They're a software that supports companies adapting the way millennials communicate through instant public work appreciation and continuous feedback. Our second guest is no stranger to the talent culture community. He's a dear friend and colleague of mine, Jason Lauritsen. He's a keynote speaker, author, and advisor. He is a very well-known employee engagement and workplace culture expert who always challenges us to think a little bit differently, which is what I really like about him. He's a cool guy. He's a former corporate HR executive, and he's really dedicated his career to helping people in profits. So welcome. Hello, Salvador and Jason. Salvador, what say you?
Hello. Excuse me, I couldn't understand.
Hello, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for the invitation.
Great to have you here. Tell us where you're calling in from today.
So I'm calling from Portugal. Actually, it's 6 p.m. over here. And, I'm pretty excited to be here talking with both of you. I've been following your work from both of you, and, it's pretty exciting to be talking here.
Oh, cool. Well, welcome. We are really stoked to have you as well. And hi, Jason. What's happening?
Hey, Megan. Greetings from I'm in a less exotic place. I come to you today from sunshiny Nebraska, just outside of Omaha. So blue skies and wind and heat and humidity today. So I'm excited to be inside on the phone
nice.
With you guys.
Yeah, no, this is great. We've got definitely a broad perspective going on here, right? We're catching all these angles, which is great. Salvador, do you consider yourself a millennial? I'm starting to lose track as a Gen Xer, to be honest with everybody. I know Jason and I were chuckling about that in the green room. It's like, Salvador, is 25? Are you still a millennial, or are you like some other generation? What's your thought on that?
Well, I think I'm still a millennial. I don't think I'm a Gen Z yet. So yeah, I think I am pretty much the target of this conversation, at least on the hot topics and the reasons why also we're going to talk about this today.
Well, what? Yeah, I mean, I'm really interested, and I'm sure the audience is, to understand a little bit more about how you went about discovering this idea of Tap My Back. So tell us just a little bit more about that.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, Tap My Back actually is a response that, within a company. So it was a Portuguese marketing agency actually that had a problem. So this marketing agency was a very fast-growing company. It was tripling the size of the staff. The amount of customers were growing enormously. There was a lot of work, a lot of excitement. Everything seemed crazy. And the company's culture was very strong. What happened before this was that, you know, that company has a very strong culture. And with this growth, the culture was being lost. And at the same time, the employees, even in that exciting environment, they were losing their motivation. And the management of that company actually asked the employees, so what's going wrong? Why are you losing motivation? And the reality was that, you know, they really wanted feedback about the good work they were delivering, because they were delivering very, very good job to the client. But they were not being enoughly recognized. And Tap My Back then was built as a product, because it was a marketing agency. They had the knowledge to build an app. And it was so smooth for the company to adopt it as part of their culture that eventually we decided to spin off. And that's precisely where I joined this journey. And happily today we have customers a bit spread all over, about 60 to 70% in the U.S., but also, well, in all other continents. And, well, it's been a really, really fun journey for me personally, and exciting for our company.
Very nice. Salvador, I have to say, you're a very brave person, because this market is absolutely saturated. And I mean that in the best way possible as a fellow entrepreneur to both of you. You know, these are exciting times if you're in the HR tech space. There's no question about it. Jason, talk to us a little bit. I want to hear your angle on what departments or people within a company right now are responsible for recognition actually being established. Talk to us a little bit more about that.
You know, I think that's a loaded question. I mean, I think it depends on what direction you come at that from, because I probably think about this a little bit differently, in that because I'm not a technologist per se, I think about it more from the, you know, from the culture and sort of organizational perspective, that I think recognition is sort of a piece of a bigger puzzle, which is, you know, we're trying to engage employees and create a place where people can do their best work and feel good about their work. And I think, you know, recognition flows out of our need to feel valued and to feel appreciated and to feel validated. And so while I would say that it ends up being, you know, it tends to be HR who's the one that, you know, if you're taking a programmatic look at recognition and you're looking at something like Tap My Back as a way to that, or as a piece of the puzzle, that's usually flowing from HR. But I would say that I think to get recognition and appreciation right starts, I mean, that's a leadership, that's a management. It sort of flows, I think, from leadership and management. They set the pace, they establish a culture or an environment where expressing appreciation or, you know, showing the love is part of how we do things, and they hold people accountable and they role model that. So I don't think it's a simple answer. I think HR tends to be the one that carries the torch for it, because leadership may not be carrying that. But I think that it should start with your leaders is where it should come from, because that's where, in order to make it sustainable, that's where it has to start.
Yeah, I actually, you and I are in agreement on that, Jason. No question about it. Let me ask you, because you've worked with corporations of all sizes, is there a trend that you see HR being torchbearer, small business versus larger sized organizations? Anything in there you're seeing right now in the market? Or are you you're just saying that's across? You don't care if it's a 10-person organization or, you know, the large IBMs and SAPs of the world, right?
No, I think
I'd love to hear your angle on that.
Yeah, I think that what tends to happen, and I don't know that this is necessarily isolated only to recognition, but I think your smaller organizations tend to be, I think it tends to more naturally flow from your leaders, just because they're in closer proximity to employees, they have more access to employees, all that kind of thing. I think it's as the organization gets larger, I think HR tends to pick up more of the mantle for carrying the torch for things like recognition and appreciation and engagement. It becomes more, you know, I think that's where you start to see that good organizations try to really maintain an integration between mm-hmm. leadership and HR. But I think the bigger you get, the more likely it is that it sits or that it's sort of delegated to HR as an HR responsibility. Without a doubt.
Well, there's a lot of information out there that supports how customer engagement is tied to employee engagement and satisfaction. I'd love to hear from each of you on what your opinion on how employee recognition programs actually affect customer relationships. Salvador, let's start with you, and then Jason, I'd love to hear your opinion on this.
So, first of all, I completely agree with what you just said, and you know it's definitely very interlinked the engagement of employees and the engagement of customers. Because first of all, like if you have employees facing your customers, if they're not committed and believing in your company, that feeling won't pass to the customers. Secondly, I about 2 weeks ago I listened to our friend Adam Smiley, which we met. By then, he was saying that, you know, about 70 to 87% of employees in companies are disengaged with their own companies. And in fact, he even said that, you know, they're being paid to do a bad job in their companies. So in the end, what this means is that, you know, if you actually have people that are disengaged with their company, sooner or later that will affect your customers. And of course, so in the end, and as a conclusion of this reasoning, you know, if you really want to have engaged customers, before anything, you must try as much as you can to have engaged employees with your company.
I love the word try. I'd love to hear Jason's angle on this. Yes, we do try, but many of us are failing at this, right, Jason? I mean, why can't we tie customer and employee experience, right, engagement? Where is this disconnect right now from your perspective?
Well, I mean, I think, first off, I think a lot of it flows back to that so much of – there's not been enough, I don't think, research done to really show the strength of the linkages. I mean, there is some that's been done, and you can show it in some – you know, some circumstances, like I really love doing work in the restaurant industry because I think there's a very pure and direct flow of employee engagement to customer engagement. It happens at every, you know, every transaction, every table, every interaction. You can see it and feel it. And it's so obvious just from anyone that's looking at it that those two are linked. But I think on a bigger scale, when the organization gets larger, we've gotten really focused on other stuff. We've gotten focused on inward-looking things like, efficiency and productivity and maximizing profitability. And I think at times it's been at the expense of focusing on that customer experience and impacting that. So I think number one, part of the challenge here is I'm not sure that it's just a lack of focus on the linkage between engagement and, you know, employee and customer engagement. But I think there's a lot of organizations that just aren't paying attention to designing customer experience in the way that they should. They're very inward focused and focused on operational measures instead of those others. But I think the bigger thing is, this is really, I mean, the initial question was what role does recognition play in driving or having an impact on customer experience? And I think, you know, this part is where I think it's really about it's kind of almost that behavioral economics, and that, like, with employees, you know, I mean, really what recognition is about in this context, at least in my mind, is how do we provide very specific reinforcement for the types of behaviors that create the types of experiences for customers that, you know, that support our growth or support our business. And because the behaviors you feed are the ones that grow and you get more of. And so you want to make sure you're very intentionally feeding those right behaviors. And I think that's the, I think that's one of maybe the underutilized or undercultivated sides of using technologies like Tap My Back and others is being very, very thoughtful and specific about the kinds of behaviors you want to recognize and reward and feed to get more and more and more of those,
mm-hmm.
and being very smart about connecting that to
right.
business outcomes like customer engagement.
Yeah, and this is all due respect to you, Salvador, but you can have the best technology in the world, but we know if those employees are not either adopting to it or they're not engaged, right? And I think that is the magic bullet formula called culture that, mm-hmm. as everybody knows, I believe is very unique depending on the type of organization you are. But that's the magic sauce right now is bringing those two things together. I do believe HR and marketing are becoming more and more enmeshed. As somebody who's a former practitioner, more on the recruiting side, and I've become more of a marketer, as many of you know. These two disciplines, and Jason, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this too. They're becoming more enmeshed, right? I mean, it's all about building messages and making sure that
yep.
employees are sharing their experiences, right, within those corporate cultures. Thoughts on that?
Yeah,
and
it's funny.
How HR and
it's
marketing
funny.
Are becoming more aligned, hopefully?
I think they're on a crash course, honestly. You're speaking my language now because dating back to some work that I did in one of my first corporate side jobs, we were, you know, doing a big employer brand project. And what we ultimately realized is that it wasn't an employer brand project, it was a brand project. And that brand
yeah.
is at the center of all of this. And so I think, you know, ultimately marketing and HR at the core in the same business. It's all, you're right, it's all about behavior. It's human behavior and behavioral economics and getting people to do things that we want them to do or motivating them and incentive. So it's all the same stuff. It's just being applied internally versus externally. So I completely agree that I think eventually organizations might be organized, you know, might ultimately have sort of human behavior group. And just with some people are pointing outwards and some people are pointing inwards.
Yep.
So I'm with you.
Yeah. One of the best forms of instruction from my point of view is feedback. Without this, I think people just don't know how they're doing, right? Nor do they understand, like, how they fit into the greater organization. So given this, why are some companies just really bad at giving feedback, Salvador? What's been your experience with that?
Mm-hmm. So, first of all, you know, especially bigger companies or older companies that are led by Gen X people, you know, these guys are giving out-of-context feedback. You know, the annual performance review, the so typical way of doing it per semester or per year, it's really out of context, and, you know, people just forget about what's meaningful for you and then your bias about the information you're getting in that feedback session, let's say. And then, secondly, you know, those moments of feedback are too serious, too compromising, in the sense that, you know, it should be a learning opportunity for both sides, both for the leader, both for an employee or a team member of that leader, let's say. And, you know, it's too compromising, too serious. People feel afraid about that moment. Then, you know, this kind of feedback usually is just top-down, but what about the bottom-up? You know, our leader can also not be doing such a good job, or we can always be trying to give him a way for him to work better with us. And usually these old-fashioned companies or bigger corps usually have these downward direction, but where is the upwards, the so-called 360 feedback? And lastly, there's a huge focus on the bad things. What about the good things? What about the celebrations that we can do
on a
daily basis,
that's a good
on a weekly basis? And I think that's especially where they're failing the most, because they're so productivity oriented that they end up not celebrating enough the good things that people are trying to do for the company on a continuous basis, on a daily basis. So I guess these are probably the main reasons I see these companies not as good as giving feedback. Probably also because they don't have enough tools to do that, and that's also one of the reasons why we are in the market, along with others, of course.
There you go. Right. Jason, what's the value in peer-to-peer feedback? Where is the payoff, either behaviorally or on your wallet or, you know, wherever? What do you see?
Well, I mean, I think the value in it, I think, is more developmental, I think, in that, well, a couple things. I mean, there's some, I think people have differing opinions around this, but I think one voice you hear, one perspective that I hear frequently about peer-to-peer is that we really value, in terms of the actual feedback, the actual recognition itself, we value at a higher level because the people that are our peers actually know or have we assume they kind of have a deeper appreciation of actually what goes into the work we're doing. They're more likely to appreciate the effort it took, as opposed to a lot of times I think our supervisors and leaders sort of are really only focused on outcomes, which I think is one of the failures that we have around feedback and appreciation
mm-hmm.
and recognition, is focusing only on outcomes and not recognizing the fact that somebody
right.
might be really working hard and not not getting recognized or acknowledged. But I think that, so there's value in it. I think the other is that the peer-to-peer, I also think there's just more decency in peer-to-peer. I mean, organizationally, one of the reasons that we don't do feedback well is because feedback sucks, especially, negative feedback sucks. Nobody likes it.
Yeah.
Nobody enjoys it. Anybody that tells you they enjoy it is lying to you. They just say that because they know they need it for
mm-hmm.
for development, or they need it for learning or whatever. We don't like it. It feels crappy. Most people that don't know how to do it, and so that makes it worse. And so, you know, but managers feel like they have to do it. Like I just pile it on, right? And I'm the manager, I do that. The peers, I think, are more likely to be have a gentler touch. They're more likely to, I think, be, you know, there's more of a social contract there. Like, I'm going to give you some feedback, but I'm actually going to take your feelings into account, and I don't want to damage our relationship,
mm-hmm.
and so I'm going to try to give it to you in a way that you'll hear it. And so I think that's where there's real magic in peer-to-peer feedback, assuming there's enough trust and relationship there and motivation to give it.
Well, and you're gaining trust, right? I mean, what I think is the biggest fail is we're creating winners and losers. And whenever you do that, communication stops. That's what I see as the problem in this scenario. The idea of just, as Salvador's talking about, hey, I just want to go and, like, be comfortable and natural. And Salvador, as you're talking about some of the old school culture that's still out there, right?
Yeah.
That we still deal with is this whole formality around talking and giving
mm-hmm.
this feedback. So pretty, you know, nuanced stuff we're unfolding right now, but very important actually in the bigger scheme of technology adoption. And what we're talking about is real employee engagement, people talking, people feeling like there's that sense of, I will still like you even though I don't like all these things about you, that unconditional love thing, right?
Exactly.
That's culture. And one of the things that drives culture is also how we think, right? And if there's one thing in my experience in working with culture and talent over the years in high-tech markets, it's this whole thing of innovation and groupthink, right? And how do companies hire like-minded people who align with their organization, yet, you know, we expect them to be innovators, right? How do those two things align? And how do we avoid that trap of becoming a bunch of yes people, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of what you're talking about, Jason. It's like, you know, it's this forced feedback. It's like this whole idea of communication and then culture, right? How do we bring those two things together? So what do you think about groupthink? What's your experience with that, Jason, especially in high-growth companies?
You know, it's super, super dangerous. I think, so first off, I'm not sure that hiring like-minded people should be our goal, right? I have become, like many have, I've become a skeptic about the whole notion of hiring for culture fit. I think you have to be super, super careful about what that means. I think, you know, maybe shared values is a place to start, but I think you have to be careful. Once people are in, if you're lucky enough or you're smart enough to hire an actual diverse group of people to come together, which is what your goal should be, I think you have to, and again, this is where these recognition programs should come in. You need to create, you need to actively recognize acts of courage. You need to actively recognize acts of dissension. You need to actively celebrate when someone speaks a dissenting opinion or pushes back or, you know, has positive conflict. Because in order to combat, you have to work really hard to combat groupthink. And the only way you do that is by making sure that you, when someone makes that move, when they have the courage or take the risk to speak up, to have a dissenting view, to push back, to slaughter a sacred cow, whatever that is, you need to lift up and celebrate them, even if it doesn't win. You got to make sure that you're putting the love there, because if you want, again, the behaviors that get fed are the ones that grow. So you got to feed it, and you got to feed it, and you got to feed it, which is uncomfortable, because most leaders, that's hard and messy, and managers and leaders don't want to deal with that. Mm-hmm. And so it's easier just to have a bunch of people that say yes. It's faster, more efficient.
Right.
So we got to push back against that.
Yeah, and that's why our numbers for employee engagement continue to be dismal, because nobody's really being honest, which sucks, you know?
Right.
Salvador, I want to hear from you a little bit around this angle. I think sometimes managers, in their well-meaning, right, they offer employees solutions rather than present them with challenges, as we're talking about. Mm-hmm. I think allowing people to figure out solutions can actually give them opportunities to grow their own confidence and their own networks. This form of micromanaging that's out there still is counterintuitive to employee and business growth in some ways right now. Given this, shouldn't companies invest in their managers to help them develop these skills needed to support a recognition program like yours? And how, if people are in cultures are willing to take this on, how can this be done from your perspective?
Mm-hmm. So, I completely think that companies should invest in their managers, because, you know, those managers, they need to be leaders instead of bosses. They need to be people that embrace a team and create a collaborative mindset among the team, and you need to be part of that. It shouldn't be like I say you do, or I am right because I have the knowledge and you should execute, but it should be a collaborative work, and we should be able to provide them that kind of knowledge and ability, and make them try through workshops or, for instance, a thing that we do a lot in our company is doing hack days, like putting like things that you need to do in our company and putting everyone together, working and problem-solving things out of context. And that's an interesting way in how we can help them being more of leaders, but part of the team instead of bosses, the ones that are trying to tell what to do and why to do. And then we should give them also tools. And again, we're talking about reward and recognition programs, but give them tools also to learn about what their teams believe in, think about them, their superiors, the people that are below them, so that they also can learn from their progress, the work that is being done by themselves and by their colleagues, and so that this is like an embracing environment. Let's not make it too serious to give feedback, but let's just embrace this culture of
Let's make
learning.
It fun.
And
yeah.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I would say to companies to do if they want to invest in their managers and help them doing better.
Well, listen,
also while relying
talented friends, we are out of time. So I want to thank you both for being here today, and let's continue this discussion on Twitter, and have a great one. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks.